This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
Bruins score a win over the Avalanche, the winless Colorado Avalanche. And I'll be honest with you, I was trying to stay up and watch the game. I fell asleep, missed the whole first period. I woke up on the couch, and they were coming out of the first intermission, and I thought that was the beginning of the game. I thought I had just dozed off, you know, for a few minutes, and that I hadn't missed an hour of the time out of my life.
It's a good nap.
But no, it was a good solid nap. I realized, oh, God, I missed the whole first period. Went back and watched it again. The fourth line, scoring goals. Korpisalo, not great out there to, by any means, but good enough as the Bruins take down the Avalanche and improve to 3-2 on the season. The fourth line is excelling right now. I think they're the story of the year so far. They've been the most consistent part of the team, I'd say, in terms of the other forward lines, in terms of any defensive pairing, and certainly when it comes to the goaltending, that hasn't been great so far and wasn't great last night. Korpisalo wasn't terrible, but those three goals on 25 shots, a couple of softies in there, and it's really, I think that's it. That's the story of this team right now is Koepke, who opened the scoring there with the second goal of the year, Peek and Zadorov with assists. It was Beecher at the end who had the empty netter to put that one away with 2 minutes left to go. As the Bruins really, listen, I didn't have this on my bingo card. I thought that the improvements that they made at the top with Elias Lindholm, with Zadorov on the defense and sort of other guys that they've mixed and matched, that was going to be the story. And Pastrnak did have a power play goal in the game, and Coyle did as well, his first of the year. He's been sort of quiet so far. Pastrnak's been better, but hasn't exactly been setting the world on fire. Really, the story of this team is that fourth line. People love this fourth line. I think that even though it's early in the year, they're making an early play to become sort of this folk hero. Fourth lines tend to do that anyway.
Oh, yeah.
People love fourth lines. People love fourth liners. I heard Razor talking about it. He's absolutely right. People love that fourth line on the championship team with Campbell and Paille and them. And it's just you're drawn to it. You know, you're drawn to that fourth line. They're supposed to be physical. If they score, it's not expected, but it's always a nice little treat. This team is getting carried by their fourth line right now.
So this is Scott McLaughlin's lead story on WEEI.com right now. And some of the numbers are ridiculous. So they've been on the ice for 40 minutes of 5-on-5 play. They've outscored opponents 8-0 in those minutes.
Is that good? 8-0? Is that good?
No other line in the entire NHL is better than +4 right now.
Nasty.
No other line. And not no other fourth
top
line.
That includes
any line.
Dreisaitl and McDavid and all that.
Any
like, no,
line.
No, any line.
There are 17 teams, whole teams, exclamation point, Scott writes, that have yet to score 8 5-on-5 goals this season. And your fourth line has 8 5-on-5 goals. So I'm going to ask you a question similar to one I asked, I believe, maybe after week one against for the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
Does this feel sustainable?
No. No, it does not.
Because I'm always into sustainability.
I love it. I'm having a great time. I'm enjoying it. I like watching this team. And when that line's out there, it's great because you – seems like there's a 50-50 chance you're going to see a goal every time they're out there. But no, this isn't sustainable. But I also don't think that the rest of the team and their offensive struggles are sustainable either. I think they'll break out eventually too. Pavel Zaki, he had another breakaway last night. He's got to score another goal. I think he only had one in the entire Panther series last year. He had one opening night and then hasn't scored since then, and really went in the tank scoring wise at various points last year. He's someone who I think is gonna start. He's just a little snake bit right now, and that breakaway was another good example of that. It was a perfect pass from Pastrnak. He had a wide open, one-on-one, and he just couldn't finish. And that's been his deal. But I don't think that's going to keep up. Marchand, who left with an injury, came back after that very weird play with Mikko Rantanen where it looked like he elbowed him, but then in slow motion it looked like he didn't really, and Marchand went flying, and it was sort of like, okay, was he that really happened? But then he left the game. He's down in the tunnel, and it's like – if he's faking it, he's going really the extra mile.
The hard sell.
That's a very, very hard sell there. He did come back. He later returned. Montgomery said that he's going to be okay and he's going to play. And what was the other thing? Zadorov in his fight with that Steinberg guy with his dad taping it. Did you see that?
No.
That was funny. Zadorov gets jumped by this guy, Matt Steinberg, and they cut to the crowd afterwards, and his dad's just sort of this, you know, this bald guy with a goatee, and he's in there videotaping it like, yeah.
Once a hockey dad, always a hockey dad. He's probably been doing that for 20 years at various ice rinks.
I would imagine, and I'll say this.
You don't want to change?
Steinberg kind of brought it to Zadorov, and he had to jump to punch him, and he was getting after him. So Big Z's going to have to, he's going to have to toughen up a little bit. He's going to have to make an example out of one of these guys, because that guy, that Steinberg guy, he just got right in his kitchen.
I don't like the Big Z thing.
Yeah, he doesn't like it either. Yeah. They interviewed him after the game. He's like, don't call me Big Z, please.
Yeah.
I don't like that. Don't call me that. I don't want this big skates to fill.
Yeah.
And I just prefer if we stay away from it. And, you know, he's a good player. We'll see if he ever comes close to being anything, any percentage of what Zdeno Chara was. But in general, I'd say that was a good win to start off the road trip here for the Bruins. They got the Utah Hockey Club coming up on Friday, I want to say.
Speaking of things I don't
Excuse me, on Saturday. Utah Hockey Club, terrible,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
terrible.
What are we doing?
I don't know. Call them the Utes or something.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Can you not do that? Because it's the Utah Utes, like it's probably trademarked. You probably couldn't sell anything.
I would say probably not. People would say that's worse than the hockey club because it's already the name of the college team.
Then
you got to call them something.
Then you'd have two Utes.
Two Utes.
What is a Ute?
That's good. Good humor there. Stiz doesn't even get it.
Quite good. Stiz, you don't know that.
Now that was a dad joke.
He knows that reference.
That was a dad joke.
My cousin Vinny.
Great that was movie. An actual dad joke, not like you getting offended the other day about a dad
because
joke.
Because it wasn't a dad joke. It wasn't a good joke, but it wasn't a dad joke.
Poor Quinnipiac cheerleaders, there's so many letters when they have to spell Quinnipiac.
Right, but that's not a dad joke. Dad joke is a bad pun, and it was not a bad pun. It was just a dumb observation.
There's a sick day in between, and he's still a little fired
up. This has been an argument for almost a week now.
Well, words have meanings, do they not?
It's been smoldering.
A dad joke is a dad joke. That means something to me.
Is there a true definition of a dad joke?
Yes,
it has to be a bad pun?
Or puns, generally,
really?
Yes. Puns or some kind of word-related joke. It's not, observations generally aren't, and that wasn't a great observation. It was just sort of a stupid idea, but I'm not trying to defend my joke beyond the fact that it wasn't a dad joke.
You don't like the classification.
It wasn't very good. I take issue with the classification. Exactly.
A dad joke is an unoriginal or predictable joke, especially a pun of a type supposedly told by fathers.
Okay, so I stand corrected.
So it was a bad dad joke.
It was a bad dad joke. All right, fair enough. It was unoriginal. I don't know if it was unoriginal, but it wasn't a very inspired.
It's not original because no one else would be like, this thing is funny. Like,
yeah, Quinnipiac, see?
Right. A lot of letters, and there's a Q and a U. That makes it weird, too.
It does. It is. It's a weird word. Anyway, let's go to the phone. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. Ray is in Revere. He has a thought on the NFL draft. Go ahead, Ray.
Yeah, listen, I'm looking at the Patriots draft. I heard you guys talking about Polk. And, you know, guys, I have to say, after Drake May, I think this draft was a bust for the Patriots. And, I think that the draft is the way to build in the NFL. You really don't build through free agency. And I'm very disappointed with, just the picks. Like, just look at what happened there with the left tackle, Wallace. They took a right tackle.
Mm-hmm.
A starting left tackle was taken one pick ahead of them and another one five picks ahead of them with Kansas City.
Yep.
I think that they need to get this fixed before the next draft. I don't think the guy who made the picks this year should be doing next year's picks. I wonder about your thoughts.
You might be onto something there, Ray. I'm not sure. We'll see what Elliot Wolf, if
the guy
is one guy, basically him and Matt Groh, I guess, is was in on it as well. But yeah, I mean, this draft isn't looking like a grand slam. That's for sure. It's a little early to say.
Way too early.
But so far, it doesn't look good. Jalen Polk's having all sorts of problems. Wallace is on IL. Robinson's on IL. Baker's not played yet. Dial's a special teamer. Milton doesn't play, and Bell doesn't play. So it's like, yeah, I mean, it doesn't look great. If Drake May has a good rookie season and it looks like you have your franchise quarterback, none of that's really going to matter.
Not at
right?
all. People will say they had a good draft in 2024.
Yep.
If he's as good as some people think he is, and we will play some audio later, a few different people are, you think I'm a Drake May guy, maniac, homer, whatever you want to call it. There are others with more national profiles that are even more in on Drake May. And if he lives up to, I would even say, like 80% of some of the hype, then people, Layden who? Oh, that's right. Yeah, Polk didn't really work out. But hey, at least we got Drake May for the next 15 years, and we're paying him $500 million because he's a stud. And I also, I'm not giving up Layden Robinson. If you made me pick another guy that I think could be around for the long haul and contribute, I'm not giving up on Layden Robinson. Wallace, I just blended them together there, made one player. Wallace, I don't feel great about. The two receivers, you can't feel great about.
No.
You may still hold out hope. You may still, based on your draft, you know, how much you liked them or whatever. But so far, they've been really disappointing.
So far, it's a Dobson-Boyd redux, and I think it's the same rounds, too. I think Dobson was a second and Boyce was a fourth. And that's, I don't even remember Josh Boyce playing in a game, let alone whatever. And that's exactly what Javon Baker's doing right now. Jalen Polk, could he be better than Aaron Dobson? I remember Aaron Dobson got beat out by that undrafted kid whose name escapes me now. He had the game winning touchdown.
Tompkins.
Kembrell Tompkins. Thank you very much. I can always remember Bob. So Kembrell Tompkins. I just couldn't remember it right then. He got in trouble, didn't he? Didn't Tompkins try and rip off the league or something? He was part of one of those fraud cases against the league.
Oh, maybe.
Maybe.
I don't recall that.
Something with that. I hope I'm not speaking out of turn.
Big Baby went to jail over that.
Big Baby did for sure.
He's like, I hope I'm right. I'm accusing him of a felony.
I know.
On live radio.
I thought it was him. Maybe I'm wrong. Let me see. Kembrell Tompkins. Kembrell Tompkins pleads guilty to stealing COVID relief funds. Boom. Score one for Arcand.
So not the league. The government.
It was, yes, I believe so. That's not the league. That is a lot worse than ripping off the league.
Federal government.
See
the pokey?
Paid back stolen COVID funds after he falsified identities to swipe over $130,000. Listen, everyone was trying to get a little piece of
COVID.
Oh, my
God. You know how much of that COVID money was fraudulent?
Oh, man.
And will never be accounted for.
It's true.
Is that enough?
He wasn't a big enough star, I don't think. But, like, the guys who really could cover a, we need this loan, we need it. Hey, come on, you got to pay us the loan.
Brady took PPE money, didn't
he? Oh, yeah. A lot of people did. And I think a lot of companies did it in a way that was technically on the up and up, but really wasn't on the up and up. Like, I think some people smartly and loophole-wise took advantage of the situation. But $133,000 doesn't sound like enough to me.
Tompkins pleaded guilty to one count of unauthorized access device fraud and one count of aggravated identity theft for the scheme. Yeah, that's probably the biggest, the identity theft part. Netted him nearly $300,000 in funds meant to help COVID relief. Per prosecutors, he withdrew nearly $230,000 from Miami area ATMs. He's driving around different ATMs.
How do you do that?
Withdrawing all the money.
Isn't there usually like a $400 limit?
If I ever had that much money in my account at one time, I would know, but I don't.
How many ATMs did you have to hit to get to $100,000?
He was only ordered to pay back $133,000.
So he got to keep. Did he go to jail?
He was sentenced to 25 months in prison, followed by a year's supervised release. So yes.
Oh, okay.
Ah, 2 years.
I don't want to do 2 years in a Florida pokey.
No, I would not either. I certainly would not. 617-7. How do we get to that? Oh, because we were talking about Aaron Dobson. 617-779-7937. There is your phone number. And there is your Bruins minute, I guess, is what that was. As the Bruins get a nice
win
over the Colorado Avalanche. They got the Utah Hockey Club and then the Nashville Predators coming up next to close out their road trip. And then they're back at TD Garden. When we come back, we'll talk with Tommy Curran right after Jackson fishes his trending out of the garbage and tells you what's going on in the world.
The Greg Hill Show, weekdays 6 to 10.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Actually, I took an iron to it, so it's okay now. Speaking of the Bruins, they got the 5-3 win over the Avalanche last night in Colorado. They got goals from Coyle, Koepke, Pastrnak, Lindholm, and an empty netter from Johnny Beecher, although they let up 3 power play goals. Korpisalo got his first win with 22 saves on 25 shots. Up next, they play Utah at the Utah Hockey Club on Saturday night. Yesterday at yesterday's Patriots practice, Marcus Jones, Verdarian Lowe, and Ramondre Stevenson did not participate. 7 other players were limited. Quarterback Drake May was on the injury report, but was a full participant. The Pats will head to London tonight for Sunday's matchup with the Jags. Week 7 of the NFL schedule begins tonight with Denver at New Orleans. Kicks off at 8:15, and you can hear the call of it on WEEI 8:50 a.m. Westwood One's coverage will begin at 7:30. Also tonight, the BC Eagles take on Virginia Tech. Kickoff is at 7:30. You can catch that game right here on 93.7 WEEI. Tonight, it's game 3 of the ALCS between the Yankees and the Guardians. Yankees have a 2-0 serious lead. And also the NLCS game 4 between the Dodgers and Mets will begin at 8:08. I'm Jackson. That is what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
That was Drake May with us on Monday in our weekly interview with him, which I assume we're going to be doing again this Monday, even though they're going to be only a few hours removed from landing back in the United States. They're playing the Jacksonville Jaguars at Wembley Stadium bright and early on Sunday morning, 9:30 a.m. kickoff. By the way, you can hear the WEEI Football Sunday program with myself, Chris Schein, Megan Ottolini, Fitzy, Tommy Kern, we're going to talk to in 10 minutes, and of course, the great Andy Hart. It will be on as well.
You're lucky you threw the grade in since I was last.
Well, you're the last one that comes on. You're the closer.
Save the best
show
for last.
Okay. I'm the closer. What kind of closer am I?
That's true. More of a John Wetland or a Mariano Rivera. Which kind? Either way, that's what you can look forward to on Sunday leading into the game. And as far as the injuries concerned, we talked about that in the first hour, about whether he's actually hurt, the MRI, who asked for it, was there even an MRI? Did Volan end up getting snookered again? Like, what's going on here? Either way, assuming that he plays, and I know you talked about this yesterday with Fitzy and with Mego, but I just wanted to revisit this conversation here of what we're expecting and what we're hoping for from Drake May. And do you want to win tomorrow? Is this tomorrow, Sunday? Is this a game that you think matters if they win or lose?
Unlike 66% of Patriots fans that want to win this game, many of whom replied, well, you're going to get a top 10 pick either way, or you're going to get a top 5 pick either way. I don't want a top 10 pick. I don't want a top 5 pick. I want a first or a second pick. It's more valuable in every round. I can do more with it. It's just a better asset. Anybody who's ever studied those stupid trade value charts knows the number one pick is significantly more valuable in every round, really, as you work your way down.
True.
So, yeah, no.
Why wouldn't it be?
Exactly. I don't want to win. I want to see Mac draft. Damn it, I did it again. I don't want to see Mac Jones.
Well, you might see Mac Jones. Something happens to Trevor Lawrence, but that's not what you meant.
Yeah. Drake May. Just recorded the preview pod on Six Rings with Fitzy a few hours ago. And tell me if I'm wrong here. Why not against a pass defense from the Jags that's not very good? Their defense isn't really that good. You can throw on them. Opposing quarterbacks have thrown 14 touchdowns and one interception so far this season.
That's 14 pretty
good. 1. You have a new hotshot quarterback who seems to like to sling it. Why don't we just open it up? You want to start fast, Gerard Mayo? Guess what? You're not going to start fast because of some drill in practice. Mm-hmm. I didn't really understand that storyline. Yeah, we're going to do this drill where we're going to say start fast, and then we're going to work on starting fast. And I'm like, how does that work? I don't really understand what drill you do to start fast. Like, it made no sense to me. Anyway, you know what a good way to start fast would be? Get the damn ball, shotgun, spread them and shred them. No stupid handoffs, no run-run-pass ratio. Pass, pass, and you know what else you do? No huddle. Go tempo. Just put your hotshot rookie signal caller in the role he's best at, which is just playing damn backyard football like he's with his brothers, right? And I'm being dead serious here. I want to see them open it up a little bit and just let him sling it. Get the receivers involved early. What did he say this week? How does he build confidence? Completions.
Yep.
So complete a damn pass on the first play of the game and go from there. Build his confidence. Take the momentum from there. So I know, old school, you got to defer, you take the ball. Nope. If we win the toss, I want the ball. If we lose the toss, I hope they defer. I want the ball. I want it in Drake May's hands, and I want to see if we can shred this defense like some other quarterbacks have. 114 combined passer rating on the season, opposing quarterbacks against the Jags. Why not Drake? Why not Sunday morning?
Absolutely. I'm 100% with you right there.
Wow, I got you excited.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to see what Drake May does in this game. I'm excited to see him against a weak team. I know that the Dolphins weren't a great team, but we didn't play in that game. So this is it. This is sort of what that Dolphins game, I think people were hoping that would be. If he had started in that game, you're getting sort of a soft landing here. You're not going up against a very, very good team like the Texans or the Niners or the other teams everybody was all afraid of. Also, Ramondre Stevenson was not at the practice before the team left for London today. Ooh. Neither was Vidarian Lowe. They were both absent. So both of those things. Lowe maybe makes you want to reconsider all this, but with no Stevenson, We saw what that run game looked like against, again, admittedly, a pretty good Texans front there, but that's not a great rushing attack without Ramondre Stevenson. I think that's clear, and that's not really what you got Antonio Gibson and Jamichael Hasty for. They weren't there to sort of split the load and be that. They were supposed to be backups for Stevenson, and he was supposed to be the lead guy. And if he's not playing, then you're going to have to rethink the run game. You're going to have to rethink every part of the offense, really. I mean, that includes the play action. That includes screens. That includes all sorts of other stuff here. And I think that all points to letting Drake May grip it and rip it, basically. That's what I'd like to see. I think that's what they're going to have to do. And not for nothing, but as you said, that's what's been successful against this Jaguars team with every other team that's played them.
So, dark and stormy nights. I knew I'd get it from somewhere. Twitch chat, text line, call you. So, dark and stormy nights on Twitch chat says, incomplete pass, sack, punt with less than 2 minutes off the clock. So, what do I care? What happened last week when you were conservative and you ran the ball and ran
run,
the ball?
Run, incomplete pass, third and long, fourth and long, punt. Yeah.
Okay.
Same thing.
And then you were playing a much better team that had a much better defense and a much better offense. The Jags, you can go three and out. By the way, you can go three and out with runs or you can go three and out with passes. I don't really care about the time on the clock in the first minute of the game. I think there's a much better chance for positivity where he feels confidence. He completes some passes. You get some energy. And maybe you get the Jags to say early in the game, oh my God, are we going to even get rolled by the freaking Patriots? Yeah. They stink like us, but they're going to roll us too? Like, I don't see any downside to starting the game in a more aggressive manner, throwing the football, no huddle, whatever you want to do. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You'll probably still be in a dogfight with another crappy football team. Who cares? What do you got to lose?
Nothing. I don't think you have a single thing to lose out there. I really don't. I think that this is as good of an opportunity as you're going to have probably for the rest of the year to get this kid's feet moving here and get him going and get him hot and try and put some points on the board and try and win a game too, which I know you just said you don't want him to win the game. If May goes out there and airs it out and the offense starts clicking and they start putting up points, they start blowing this team out, I'm going to be saying run up that score, man.
Me too. In the moment, I'll want them to win the game. And then afterwards, I may kind of regret it and be like, oh, son of a bitch, we're not going to get the number one pick anymore.
All right. Joining us now on the phone, on our hotline, is Tommy Kern of NBC Sports Boston, brought to you by FlexCar. Save thousands with your flexible car lease at FlexCar.com and by Drains by James, Eastern Massachusetts' top provider of drain and sewer cleaning and repair. Mr. Kern, how we doing?
Christian, Andrew, how's everybody?
Everybody's good. It's good to be talking with you. It's been a bit of an interesting week here for the Patriots, who I believe have just taken off now for London and will be on their way there in transit across the pond. This type of week, I think, has brought up some questions with Christian Barmore and his whole thing in Providence, as well as some of the back and forth between Jalen Polk and the coaching staff. And I guess the question is, what's the vibe right now in this locker room? How is everybody sort of reacting to this news? And is Jerod Mayo in control of things?
I think the vibe is they need a win. They need it really badly. What I'm kind of focusing on this week, which is kind of related to what you're talking about, is when it's stated so frequently that it's a building year and a foundational year and you're trying to move ahead and establish who you want to be a part of the future, there's an acknowledgement within that that you're a team that doesn't really expect to win and succeed very much this year. You're trying to win. You're trying to get better. You're trying to figure out who you're going to be. But there doesn't seem to be like the same week-to-week urgency with that mindset. You contrast that with last year, for instance. Last year, the Patriots were a bad team, too. I don't know if they were 1-4, but floundering. But there was an urgency that was present always because they were trying to get to a place. And then when the urgency left, because you could tell that they were not getting to the place of success, there became urgency just in the anticipation of what was going to happen. And I think it's different now because the expectations are so low that the urgency is absent. And when the urgency is absent, I wonder if guys take the same level of ownership. It kind of tracks back to me pointing out Drake May glad handing after the Jets game a few weeks ago. And again, that was something that I used as a jumping off point for a bigger picture is don't be accepting of losses. Don't be accepting of being a bad team. Don't just say, well, that's how it is. And that's how we are. And that's how I think the two things are related. You know, Jalen Polk can take responsibility for dropping balls that are clearly catchable in his hands and not say he's got the best hands in the NFL. I don't get the concept. And I think you can hear I'm talking in circles here, but that's the point I'm trying to make with this team and the vibe right now.
Tom, do you like my idea? And I don't know if you could hear it when you were waiting. I want this team. I'm a little like Kayshon Booty, be a little more aggressive. I know Jerod Mayo wants to start fast. What's wrong with the idea of maybe taking the ball, or if you get possession first, going, I don't know, shotgun, tempo, let Drake May throw the ball a few times to start the game, kind of taking the bull by the horns and trying to get everybody involved early?
I love it. And the reason is we spent 5 weeks and they got to 1-4 trying not to lose.
Right.
Trying to play games close to the vest, stay in the game, wait for the other team to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And in playing not to lose, they lost all attack mode, and Jacoby Brissett was basically willing to take sacks and unwilling to try and make plays. And I think that Alex Van Pelt called the offense in a similar way. And he actually came out last week doing the same thing. I mean, they didn't want to get him into third and down, and they run the ball on first and second down right into the middle of the defense. Of course it's going to be 3rd and 8.
Yep.
So, yeah, 100%. You have nothing to lose. It's hard to watch you right now. At least be fun. And last week's game was fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. It was very fun to watch. It would not be fun if Drake May is out with a knee injury. Did he or did he not get an MRI, Tommy Kerr?
And is there a house in Connecticut?
Yes, right. That too. First of all, we know that only one person has really reported this. I heard Phil Perry talking about it yesterday, or last night, I should say, and I guess the team hasn't denied it. Is there any update on MRI gate here?
No. I have no information as to whether or not he got an MRI. He's on the injured list with a knee. He was full participant yesterday. We'll see if he's listed as full again today. But he's got a knee injury, and it tracks that somebody with a bad knee might get an MRI. But he's a full participant, so I just until he's missing time, I would or declared limited, and we saw a video of him today or saw him out of practice moving around fine. Whether or not he got an MRI, I can't imagine that Ben Volen would make it up out of whole cloth. And I know that he's had some sourcing issues in the past, but he's got an E thing. I wouldn't be stunned if he had an MRI.
So, your guy, Jerod Mayo, I don't know if I want to call it, he didn't threat, he didn't really promise, he just sort of stated that there's going to be changes, including starting lineup changes, based on the way the team's been playing, based on some of the undisciplined play. Do you like sort of the approach he's taking in that area in terms of trying to get these guys in order and to do the right thing? And am I wrong to assume Jalen Polk could be one of the options to not get as much playing time?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, if you don't catch the football and you're one of the lowest rated receivers, if not the lowest rated receiver in terms of balls, is he 9 or 10 catches out of 24 balls directed his way? And the number of drops, it has to be close to 4 or 5. I think that I would say, yeah, that would be a place to start. Does that mean he's trash and can never play? I doubt it. He looked good all summer. So, of course, did Tyquan Thornton annually, but I digress. I think it's a smart move. You asked initially about the vibe around the team, and the Barmore thing is the Barmore thing, but then you add them all up. The Javon Baker speaking out on social media because he was mad at authorities. Now Barmore speaking on social media. You have Jabril Peppers has been arrested. You have just this vibe around the team of a little bit of disorganization. And I think that they need to ooze competency and ooze we're in control here. We have structure. We're in a position where we have put football at the highest level of importance to us. So if saying out loud at the podium, we're going to make changes, when I ask him, what do you do when these guys commit penalties? Are you going to yell at them? I mean, who gets yelled at was the question that I asked him when they have repeated penalties. And just to state, I'm going to make changes, I guess, is at least trying to get your hands on the reins.
Any idea who else he could have been referring to, if not Jalen Polk?
No, I guess anybody, because it was a question related to penalties, anybody who committed a penalty that was head-scratching and horrible would be probably in the crosshairs.
Okay. Robert Kraft spoke with the Breakfast Club this week. Were you surprised by his comments on Bill Belichick and the way things ended there? It seems like he struck a bit of a different tone from what he's been saying for really since it happened.
Just in the word, using the word fire, I think would be... I mean, I think that we all understood that when they stood there and said that it was a mutual parting of the ways, the reason they were mutually parting was because Bill wasn't accomplishing what they had hoped. And I think that Robert probably understood Bill wasn't willing to make whatever changes could have even conceivably been made to keep the job. So it was going to be a firing based upon the performance of the team over the last 5 years and the direction that it was in. And the drafting and everything else. So, when we look back, really, Christian, at all the saber rattling that Robert Kraft did in the years prior about he's got to perform, we've got to make the playoffs, we have to be a team that does these things, there was always an or else attached. So for him to articulate to the Breakfast Club or whatever it was that he didn't do those things, so he was fired, really tracks with everything else he said. I think it was more honest than he had been previously. So there's going to be a point at which one would hope that being stated, which is the facts of the matter, as far as Robert Kraft was concerned, agree or disagree with the decision to move on from Bill, let sleeping dogs lie.
I understand this is a premature question. It's also disrespectful, but I asked it to...
Who's getting fired?
funny, you're pretty good at this then. I asked it to Mike Giardi yesterday, and he gave me an interesting answer. I won't tell you his answer, but what do you think the percent chances are that Alex Van Pelt is the offensive coordinator for the Patriots in 2025?
93.
Oh. Oh, interesting.
Look at... Just simply... What's the most important thing for the New England Patriots in 2024?
Developing Drake May.
Drake May.
100%. Drake May, when he was out there at his first rookie minicamp, was robotic. Bedard and Giardi both said he's got a hitch in his throw. He didn't look extremely smooth. His footwork was in progress. By the time minicamp came, he wasn't a hell of a lot better. You could still see that. We all had some misgivings about little aspects of what we were watching. Beginning of training camp, Jacoby Brissett was a better player than Drake May by a kind of a significant amount, and he outperformed him at the beginning of training camp. Midway through training camp, May kind of hit the turbo boost, and he started performing better and better. And now over the first 6 weeks, as Van Pelt pointed out today about something that May didn't practice this week. He said, I don't think he could have done that in week one. The most important thing in 2024 is developing Drake May. Drake May is developing at a pretty astounding clip when you really look at where he was and where he is. So I would think he's doing a really good job with that, with the most important thing. Is the play calling second guessable? 1,000,000%.
All right.
Is he getting what he needs to from his different positional places, especially wideout offensive line? No, but the point I'm trying to make is if he's doing well with that, steady would probably be the way to go next year too. Sorry about that.
I apologize, Tommy, but it is now time for the flex.
No, what do you say? Do you think that makes sense?
No, I do. I was just really looking forward to the flex of the game, and I was just very excited to get to it. That's what we got to do.
You better have one.
With Tommy Curran's flex of the game presented by FlexCar, ditch the dealership and save thousands with FlexCar. Tommy Curran, what's the key to this game this weekend against the Jaguars in London?
The key to this game is going to be Drake May's ability to be mobile. He ran for 3 first downs last week, was able to generate plenty of yards in off-schedule throws as well, including the one to Hunter Henry for 30-plus yards. Will he be limited at all with his knee? So the flex of the game is how well does Drake May actually flex his knee on Sunday in London? So bear that in mind as you watch the New England Patriots taking on the Jacksonville Jaguars Sunday morning in London.
Very good. All right, Tom, we'll talk to you Sunday, WEEI football Sunday, bright and early, and we're looking forward to that. Thanks for the time, and we'll talk to you Sunday.
What time are we doing that?
I think like...
I have 8:30 pregame.
Oh, really?
Holy...
Oh, boy. All right, we'll get you in the 7 o'clock hour, then. I guess we'll have to.
Okay.
I know. I'm looking forward to it, too. See you, Tom. That's Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston, joining us here on WEEI Afternoon. 617-779-7937. We'll get to your phone calls, and we'll talk Celtics as the ESPN top 100 list of all the top 100 players in the NBA is out, and the Celtics are all over it. We'll get to that next. The sunny Joe Mazzulla there. I was speaking a couple weeks ago with a great quote, by the way. That's an all-time quote. Target on our backs. I want to see the laser pointer right between my eyes. So that's a cool quote.
Have you ever thought about it?
Have I thought about what?
Like the reality of that. If you were actually going to be assassinated, sniped, would you want it, see the dot and know just before that you're about to get shot in the head?
What the heck?
Or would you rather take it in the back? You're going to die either way. You're dead.
I gathered that.
Okay. Which one would you prefer? To know for a half a second, millisecond.
No, you don't want to know.
I prefer you jump in front of me.
And you will not necessarily be dead. My uncle was shot in the head and survived.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
Oh my lord!
In World War II, in the Battle of the Bulge.
Like in Regarding Henry.
I don't know what that is. But
it was a Harrison Ford movie where he got shot in the head, but he survived, and they had to reteach him how to talk and everything.
Yeah, he was in the Battle of the Bulge, got shot in the head, and was down and. When the battle was finished and the guys were going and picking up the, you know, the dog tags of the fallen, they noticed breath coming from his nose and saved him and lived till like 88.
Holy crap, that's a great story.
Yeah.
Was he fine?
88.
Like he could speak or
his speech was a little bit impeded, but he had a head on his shoulders and second to none. Very, very sharp guy.
This segment really started differently than I thought it would.
But that's a great story.
It's a good story.
They saw the breath when they were about to take the dog tags of the dead.
Yeah.
And then you end up living till 80, having a good life.
Yep, absolutely. Yep.
That's amazing. That's like
and
a
he was
movie.
Like, hey, someone take this bullet out of me, please.
Yeah.
Just, if you don't mind. Jackson, by the way, says he has another story for us at some point in the show.
Yeah, I don't think it's as upbeat as that.
As upbeat as his uncle getting shot in the head?
See, this is typical of you.
What?
You're not fixating on the right part. He got saved.
He did get saved. That's great. I think it's a great story, but it was.
That
not
says
exactly...
something about your mentality.
What
just
are you
like
talking
Monday.
About my mentality?
Remember Monday? Everybody's like, Drake May. You're like, the other 52 stink. This story is about a man being saved on the battlefield and living till he's 80.
Shout
and you're
out
like,
story.
Got shot in the head.
Well, yeah. I mean, listen, he did.
Shout out to Uncle Norris.
But shout
yes,
out to Uncle
I do
Norris.
Have a I have a tale to weave that is all over the place, roller coaster. And despite the situation, there's a little bit of a happy ending, so that's a little tease for
okay,
you.
That's good. It's sort of like the uncle story. It's the happy ending, I guess. We'll get to that a little bit later on
okay,
in the show.
Okay, go ahead. Celtics.
The ESPN NBA Top 100 list is out. We saw, I think, 100 to 50, or maybe 100 to like 11 were released in the last couple of days. And there were a bunch of Celtics all over that as well. The top 10 are out. And the top 10 players in the NBA this year, according to ESPN, are as follows.
Jaylen Brown.
10, Anthony Edwards, 10th best player in the league. Number 9, Kevin Durant. Number 8, Joel Embiid. Number 7, LeBron James. Number 6, Steph Curry. Which, by the way, LeBron and Curry, a little high maybe.
Yeah, a little old.
Jason Tatum, 5th.
Top five player,
but fifth.
Should be a top.
Behind Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, Giannis, Luka, and Jokic, number 1.
You have a problem with any of that?
I think he should be ahead of Gilgeous-Alexander.
I'm not so sure.
I think he should be maybe even possibly ahead of Giannis at this point.
Not so sure. I guess you could make an argument for those.
I think you definitely can make an argument for both of them. And
I'd like to see his jump shot first.
I would too. It looks like it's getting a little bit better there. And Gilgeous-Alexander, Giannis are both great players, obviously. I think they all deserve to be top five. But I think that Tatum, especially after, and I know he didn't win the finals MVP or anything like that, but after the season that he had, after winning a championship, after being the central focus of the offense and really the leader on the team there, it should be, I think, at least in the top four, top three. I'd put him ahead of Giannis just because Giannis gets hurt so much. Gilgeous-Alexander, I still think, has some things to prove about his game and about that team. I'd put him behind Jokic and Luka, but that's it. I'd have him 3. I'm surprised that he was down at 5. But that's not really the headline here. The headline here is that the entire starting five of the Boston Celtics are in the top 50. And there's no other team that has even, I think, 3 that are in the top 50. Jaylen Brown is 14th. I'll give you the next 5 after 10. 11 is Wembanyama, which I think is a little high. 12 is Jalen Brunson. 13 Anthony Davis, 14 Jaylen Brown, 15 Devin Booker. Do you think Jaylen Brown is appropriately placed on this list?
Yeah, I would say that's probably even positive, optimistic. I think that's a good spot for him. I don't think he's a top 10 type player, top 5 type player. I think that his career would show he's a all-NBA-ish player, and that's the top 15 players each year, three teams. So I think that's, even for me, who likes to fight these things.
I
and
thought
sort
for
of,
sure you would have a big defense of Jaylen Brown being higher than that.
You know what kind of hit me? Who'd you say was six?
Six is Steph Curry.
Okay, see, like, I think there's, you know how we always, in the NFL, when we're doing quarterbacks, there's like blue chippers, and you decide where it kind of falls off to that next group. After Tatum, I think you can argue that's where it falls off. Like, the top five are the prime of their career, superstar MVP candidates, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Then that next tier is like, well, they're old and they're Hall of Famers, and I don't know how high they belong, but we can't put them that low because they're still good. Like, to me, there's a divide there between five and six, more so than between four and five, maybe, for example.
Yeah.
But do I think that Jaylen Brown should be up there? No, like, he hasn't done it in the totality of a regular season. He had a great postseason, great run. And the fact that you have two of the top 14 players, you have two all-NBA players,
yes.
essentially, that's a nice building block. I find the next part sort of ridiculous. Because in my head, did you jump to this in your head? I don't know if you do these types of things. But so there's 30 teams in the NBA, right?
Yes.
So technically speaking, the top 50 should be one for every team. Like if it was just balanced, right? If the league was totally balanced, so there'd be a top 30, you'd go through every team. And then not everybody would get a second player in the top 50. And you have five of the top 50?
Yes.
You should have five of the top 150, right? Like 30 times five?
If it was like the NFL, maybe.
If it were like a draft, or if it were balanced and everybody drafted properly, you should really only have five of the top one. You have five of the top 50? Now, I think they're a little inflated right now, if I'm being honest.
Maybe. They might be. And listen, if you're spending this much money, you probably should have this many people in the top 50.
Yeah.
If you're throwing your dad has to cash out and sell the team because you've been throwing money around like this. But after Brown at 14, Drew Holiday clocks in at 36, Derek White at 39, Kristaps Porzingis at 46. There's your starting five, all in the top 50. And Al Horford is on the list too. He's 96th. Down at the bottom. And listen, next year,
you got 6 out of 96.
Peyton Pritchard may be in there. Like, you know, you may see more than that next season. And I think that this is
depends
this is
how many times they play Detroit.
Five players, your entire starting five in the top 50. I don't know if that's ever happened before. I don't know if any top 50 list or top 100 list has ever had five starters from one team in it like that. I'm not sure if historically that's ever happened. And that's going back way back, you know, past my lifetime, you know, the 86 Celtics, some of those old Bulls teams, some of those old Lakers teams with Kareem and Magic and Worthy and all of them, like, that's even then, all five starters, like, I don't remember, I don't know that that's ever been like this.
And it causes me to rethink the mocking I do of NBC Sports Boston when they went on their whole campaign that they all should be all-stars.
Right.
Seems less ridiculous with this ranking, right?
It really does.
What's the all-star team, 15 deep? So there's 30 players on the All-Star team,
something like that,
across the NBA?
Uh-huh.
Okay, it's not as ridiculous as I thought it was at the time when they were fluffing it up.
No, it's really not. It's really not at all.
Or is it? Are these guys just inflated because they're on the NBA champions and they're the best team in basketball? Like, is there a baked-in inflation of their value?
I don't think so. I think if you look around the other rosters, especially of, like, the good teams in the league, there's other teams with, like, great trios, great duos. Mm-hmm. Five, top five, there's a weak link in every single one of them, in the Lakers and the Clippers and the Timberwolves and the Knicks, the Milwaukee Bucks, the Cavs, all of the Sixers. Like, there's always, and when I say weak link, I mean someone who's not a top 50 player. Maybe they're good, and maybe they're a good role player, but they're not a top 50 player. They're not considered that type of talent, and it's just, I don't know. I kind of agree with that, and I agree with this, too. The Suns have three great players. I got Booker, Durant, and Bradley Beal all on the team. The other two guys, I don't know, Mike Conley, he's not a top 50 player, and their center is, Nurkic, I think, who's not a top 50 player in the league either.
Right.
So it's very rare to have this much talent in your starting five.
Do you think Porzingis would be in the top 50 if he was on Dallas.
Warriors, or not?
Let's
the
just
Warriors,
say Dallas,
the, Wizards, or the
or wherever.
Or something
like that's where I wonder.
He played in 60-something games last year. Had good numbers. I think he probably would be.
Okay,
I think he would be.
Maybe
I think they're
because when he's healthy, he gets a ton of love.
They're getting a little, and there were portions of games and the postseason when he was the best player on the floor.
Yes,
like shorter portions, but still portions where he showed his ability, his value, and his skill. So, I guess maybe it's not this. You know what? This also lends credence to my whole idea that it's not championship or bust; it's wins, record, or bust. The banner is a foregone conclusion. Print it, hang it, cover it. We'll unveil it when it's over. Right now, this team, if you have five of the top 50 players in the league.
You should do something historic.
Yeah. History. And historic is 74 wins, right?
Yeah.
It's that simple. Or at least go undefeated at home.
That'd be cool.
Imagine if they went 41-0 at home. 81-0 would be hard, but.
The 86 Celtics, I think, were 41-1.
Yeah, right? One, I believe.
Something like that. So 40-1? I don't
know. So to be historic,
yeah,
you got to go undefeated at home. Mm-hmm. That should be a goal.
It should be.
Actually, it shouldn't be.
Probably
this is
will
talk
be.
Radio crap. The goal is to win a ring.
Yeah.
No one really cares.
I mean, you
want to
go out and
crap.
Win every game, right? It's not like they want to lose games.
Right, but reality is all that really matters is the trophy, the ring, the banner. Those are the things that people remember. Even
and
the
Tatum
records.
Winning MVP, as he told to Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, I don't care about that.
Yeah.
If there's anybody I want to win MVP, his name is not Jason Tatum. It's Jaylen Brown.
True.
Because I want to see how that soap opera would unfold if he somehow won the MVP.
That would be good for us. 617-779-7937. We'll take a quick break.
The job market is constantly changing, and at Bowling Green State University, we're evolving too, working with industries to develop innovative majors in education, engineering, business, and healthcare that will give you an edge when you enter the workforce. BGSU is ranked as the number one public university in Ohio for career preparation by the Wall Street Journal. Personalized career coaching, networking opportunities, and hands-on immersive learning set you up for success. That's the BGSU experience. Learn more at bgsu.edu/careerready.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.